This is a Collider.com audio interview.
So we love these road trip movies, and I was wondering, when you guys have the opportunities to take road trips, do they become profound journeys of self-discovery?
The only road trip that I've ever taken was back from Portland when I was up there doing Twilight. I bought like a little truck and drove home. And it wasn't, you know, I mean, it wasn't the most like transformative experience, but it was fun. It like gave me a sense of freedom and like, you know, going away from something that was like a rather intense experience. But have you ever had any road trip experience?
On this job, actually, prior to going down to start rehearsal before we'd met, I went and did a 2-week road trip from northern Oklahoma down through into Louisiana and down into New Orleans, to having started on a reservation, and then basically to get a sense of it, because quite rightly the producers thought, who is this English actor playing this crazy part? So I should probably get some sense of the... and I went with a guy called Terrence, and we had the most amazing time and met wonderful people. And we'd turn up at these motels with this massive guy and then this skinny English dude and like a Crown Royal bag filled with money, which we would pay at these motels to spend the night. And they thought we were sort of drug dealers, I think, or something. Anyway, so it was a great experience.
Eddie, could you move closer to my side?
What was your experience like on the reservation, and how long did you stay there?
I was there for about 4 days, and I went to the museums there. I spoke to the head of this old man who was trying to keep together the idea of the language, the indigenous language in the Osage, because it's a dying language, really, and the only way they can keep it alive is by persuading young kids to do it as an extracurricular thing. And it was sad, actually, in some ways, to see that it was a dying part of their culture. But it was geographically, and it was a beautiful, beautiful part of the world, and I had an amazing time.
Kristen, as the world is your oyster right now, what attracts you to a role? What are you looking for when you get a script now?
I mean, as much as you can say, like, well, I'd like to do this because it's different from, you know, what I've done before, I can't really plan things out like that, because despite whether or not a character sort of fits my description and the script is good, what actually drives me to do something like this, which is a really bizarre thing if you think about it, to play a part in a film and for more reason than just, oh, I get to be in a movie. It's like, no, I want to live out this life. It's like, why? So it has to speak to me in some way, and that's always hard to describe. So I don't know what I want to do. And this is the first time I haven't had like one of my next jobs lined up. So I have a totally clean horizon, and that's actually pretty exciting.
Is that a great place to be, though? I mean, because, you know, it's one thing to be really hot and then have your schedule tied up for 2 years. Now you can, you know, choose anything. I mean, what kind of offers are coming your way?
I mean, you know, it's not like I'm getting, like, it's not like everyone's like, oh, God. I mean, to be honest, not a whole lot of, it's such a weird thing to talk about in this capacity. I've been getting, you know, you always sort of don't look at scripts that are very clearly just framework, and they just want to put a dollar sign in the picture frame, and that's like, you know, but that's, it's so obvious, you know. I only want to do work that I find to be moving, and that's something that I can't be specific about. So I'm totally lucky, and I can't believe that I am. And I'm not saying that I can do anything, but I definitely have more opportunity than I've ever had. So, like, it, you know, it's awesome.
Well, you say you don't have your next gig tied up, but what are your feelings on Breaking Dawn? Do you think they're going to do 2? Or do you know when that'll tie you up?
That probably in November, but I don't know if it's going to be 1 or 2.
Do you have a gut feeling or an impression on the way things are going? Because why wouldn't they just make it 2?
Yeah, I mean, sure, that would be a...
I just want to ask one question about that. I just want to know, and it's a follow-up on his. Are you guys contracted for 2 movies, or are you contracted for 1? Because that's like a big thing that people are talking about, because it might be that they can't make 2. And I'm sorry,
know.
I'm just going to throw that out there.
I don't know, actually. I can't imagine that they wouldn't want. I mean, the story so completely warrants 2 films, and it would suck to have to. It would be really disappointing to have to like be able to just go like, okay, we have to lose this sequence and this scene and this sequence and this. And so, like, I would like to do two movies, but I really, to be perfectly honest, don't know what they're going to do. So.
But this to pick on Brian's phrase about the world being your oyster, you made this film before you started eating oysters, right? Didn't you shoot this before Twilight?
Yeah.
This predates it. So at that point, I mean, now, you know, we look at you and say, oh, okay, here's, you know, the star of Twilight that's going to draw in an audience. At that time, that didn't enter into any of your thinking in terms of choosing this role. Is it kind of hard to think back then? Would you approach things differently now that you have this international profile and all these oysters that you...
The word oyster now is getting like... I guess because I don't hold the reins. I really follow, to put it absolutely lamely, my heart. I don't think I would have made a different... I mean, it would be really a shame if just because I did one movie, and I know it's four or five or whatever, but it is one story. It's one project for me. It's like the same character. It's not like that changes. So if something like that would then affect choices, I don't have like this scheme of how people are going to, you know, receive my movies in the order that I do them and why I do scary movies and why I do movies about, you know, disaffected teens, which is I get all the time. They're just people that I really, you know, wanted to play. I don't know what the hell I'm doing. I, you know, I'm just playing parts that speak to me, so.
Well, what about Martine resonated for you?
I felt like she was, I mean, I could relate to her in that she's so sort of the typical girl that really wants to be out there and smiling and like totally in the middle of whatever's going on, but has been sort of embarrassed one too many times and has just gone, I can't do that anymore. And I feel like she's also isolated herself in terms of like, she's put herself above everyone else. It's like she can't talk to people because they've let her down too many times. And so she's suddenly, in reaction to that, you sort of make yourself better than them. And she realizes through this journey, which is like a really, I mean, it's a cool thing to see such a young person go through, to sort of go like, oh God, I never looked at you. And now I'm opening my eyes and I can see you and I was wrong. So I liked that.
Question for both of you. You both show a facility at Accents. Has that always come easy, or is it something you work at and like get tapes of the sounds? And...
Well, for sure. I think some people you meet are those guys who can tell anecdotes and suddenly burst into a broad Scottish accent. And I'm afraid, sadly, I wish I'd been born with that gene, but I don't have it. And in fact, on this job, when I got this job, I said part of my sort of talking to Arthur Cohen, the producer, was we will need a dialect coach, and he is Swiss, and was like, "Well, why would you need one of those?" And I'm like, "Have you seen the part I'm playing?" But we had a guy called Michael Buster who worked, because it's, you can generalize anything, you know, you can try and give something that will sell as being of an area, but it's important that when you're playing someone, that you respect the characters you're playing, and you try and play them as truthfully as you can. So we had a guy called Michael Buster who they literally record voices. They go around the country in the area recording voices and work with you specifically on those vowel signs.
I think they go to school for it, yeah. Too, to be, I mean, I sound like I know nothing about this, obviously, yeah. But it's like they break it down in such a, there's like 15 accents just within Louisiana or something, yeah. Like that, it's, yeah. Like...
And the technical thing is a cool thing to start with, actually, because, yeah. It gives you something...
And then you can fall back and I'd be like, no, I have my accent.
Exactly.
It's like, it would be like me doing like an English accent and just doing like watching Mary Poppins and going like, okay.
Yeah. Well, Eddie, I think this is one of the first times we've seen you in a contemporary character. Mm. You've been doing so many different eras. and in fact, I'm very interested to see Glorious 39, because, yeah. That sounds like a tremendous story.
Yeah.
But is there, for one thing, is there certain comfort in playing somebody who is of this time and place?
Absolutely there is. And it's a bit like what Kristen was saying about playing disaffected teenagers or whatever. For some reason, the way you look, the way you speak, something about your personality pulls you to doing, and I have a sort of bipolar career of either playing sort of incestuous Americans with parental issues or
yeah.
British period dramas, you know, and it was wonderful for me. One of the greatest things about this script was that when I read it, I thought they were insane to even ask me to audition for it, and that stayed the whole way through. I thought, I'm so far from this character, let's have some fun with it and see what happens, and it was a joy, an absolute joy, and the contemporary side of it was also wonderful.
The director mentioned to us that you would be coming to Broadway very soon, and I was just wondering, like, is that kind of a thing where you have to sort of manage your expectations, or how do you stop from being way too excited?
from Broadway?
Yeah.
Well, it's a dream. It's a play about Rothko. It's called Red, and it's with Alfred Molina, who's an actor I absolutely admire. It's just the two of us in the play. And we've had a great run in London. It's gone fantastic. Well, so it's nice knowing you're going with something that people appreciate. How do I control my excitement? Kristen's already had to spend all morning dealing with my excitement. but no, it's great. She came to London recently, and I forced her
to
come
see it. I've seen it. He's incredible in it.
She has to say that, but no, I paid her to say that. But the answer is I get to live.
He's
in New
going
York
to Broadway.
I
mean, that's yeah. That never happens. I mean, they would just recast. You know what I mean? And he's.
It's exciting. It's exciting. Although that being said, talking about playing American or playing this is playing Rothko, who is, you know, a New Yorker, and the character I play, the assistant, is a New Yorker, and there is something, you sit there going, is there something a bit cocky about two British actors bringing an American play by an American playwright to New York where it's set? And the answer is yes. Will I be working with Michael Buster, our dialect coach, this week? Sure as hell I will.
Oh, you're going to work with...
Yeah, I'm going to work with Michael. Sorry.
Kristen, you said before you kind of take your career in terms of you follow your heart. Do you act the same way? And I'm asking that because we had Maria and William here before, and William is like meticulous, researched, and
totally.
Maria is very like
totally.
Seat of the pants. So
those two are interesting to see, yeah. We were talking about it all day because, you know, we've been talking about William all day, and we've been saying how, you know, you get hired on a job, and I had done, you know, I had had roles in movies before that I took really seriously that I really liked, and I guess I learned that I was a fairly impulsive actor that, that didn't really necessarily need to, or I wasn't aware of the fact that if I felt something, I didn't need to sit down and go, okay, this is why, this is why, this is why, and it helps so much. Like, I understand the story so much more because of William, and the thing is about, like, the whole rehearsal process. It's not like we stood up and did the scenes and tried to get them right. It was just about understanding. And that, you know, he never stops. He, like you said, I mean, he never stops trying to acquire
more knowledge. Yeah. And also in a story that has so much, you know, the script moved us both, right, when we read it emotionally. But also there's so much space in it that is about the actors fleshing out to make them real. Now, in a story like that, it's important. You can't just go fly by the seat of your pants. No. You have to work out a grade at what stage what intimacies are going to grow. And so that was what I think, why this film, maybe more so than other films, really needed that time of us being with each other
because
and playing.
Because so much is
stuff.
Not said. I mean, like, it's not like there's a whole lot of, you know, events in happening, like, within the plot.
Yeah.
That we, you know, what the really, like, dynamic, like, changes in the story happen, like, with, and you know, a lot of people might not be into that type of movie, but this is just that movie. It is, like, very much within the glances and not really
and the intimacy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, The Runaways is getting a lot of buzz too. How has that experience been for you on the festival circuit, and what sort of different attention are you getting for that?
I mean, I think it's so exciting that it became sort of, I mean, we all knew it was going to be, like, if it did well, that it would be, like, a Sundance movie. But now it's, you know, it's being released, and it became a bigger deal than we thought, which is always just very exciting. And I haven't been getting, like, different attention. You know, I do interviews about your movies. I'm getting, like, I don't know. Sundance was awesome, though. I love Sundance. It's one of the only places that you can go and, like, show your movie and then talk to 300 people who just saw it, and they're actually just sitting there honest, like, yeah, we just saw it. It's just a different experience.
There's an immediacy, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's like...
Both of you are spending huge amounts of time away from home. When you go somewhere on location, are you trying to make it more like home, or do you really kind of drown yourself in the lifestyle wherever you're at?
I try to do that. I know people who... actors who go on location and, like, make their trailers like their homes, like, they literally put pictures up and stuff. I don't do that. No, I really like being where I am.
One of our great benefits and then bonuses of being an actor, particularly on Yellow Handkerchief, I find it more so than any other job I've done, is that, it, you know, when you go and visit a town or a city, you're staying in a hotel, you're there for a couple of weeks or whatever, you know, you get to scratch the surface of a city. As an actor going to work in Louisiana, the entire crew were from New Orleans. So you have a whole group of people who you're introduced to and meet and become your friends, who instantly give you access to a city they've grown up and lived in. So
totally.
Rather than just turning up and like getting the tourist opinion on it, you actually get this amazing access to something which is people taking you into their homes and so it's a real, it's one of the great upsides of our job when it works.
And you're like made to pretend that you actually live there. So it's like, yeah, this is where I live now. And you have to actually sort of, you know, I mean, more so on the other movie that I did in New Orleans, but yeah.
So that's how you learn to bite their little heads off.
There you go. There you go. I had a lot of practice in that.
Was there any particular, like, New Orleans, like, classic thing, like, whether it's, like, drinking hurricanes or having a beignet?
Beignets. Ah, God. I remember the first time I went to Café du Monde, and they gave these everyone been talking about beignets. I don't know what beignets. Showed me this thing, and it was, like, deep-fried, and they pour more icing sugar on it than I'd ever... And I was like, that's
powdered
physically impossible. Powdered sugar. Thanks, translator. But I sat there going, it's impossible to eat that much sugar. Are you insane? And afterwards, I'd had one, and I remember going back the next day and saying, no, powder more, give me more. That was my favorite memory.
What about you, Kristen, was there one thing for you?
I liked petting, like, the mules that walked around Jackson Street, and they were like, come on, take a ride. I was like, no way. I just want to go, like, pet them. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not going to be dragged around by this thing.
Kristen, what's the call like when your mom calls and says, I'm going to direct a film, and I'd like you in it?
I wish it was like that. I wish it was like that. We're trying to get it, you know, off the ground. I mean, if she called me right now and said, we're making the movie, I would be, you know... I mean, I would be really excited. And then I guess the question, how would it be to work with your mom? I mean, we're really close. And then at the same time, we're really, like, creatively very, very different. And so I feel like it would be cool. It would be, like, not... I think that we could actually leave, like, you know, the family thing. I feel like we both like what we do so much that we could actually work on something and do something pretty cool. But
and you respect each other. That's quite like...
Yeah, that too. Yeah, that too.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Thanks.